When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to another episode of Strictly Business, the podcast in which we speak with some of the brightest minds working in the media business today. I'm Andrew Wallenstein with Variety. I'll start this week with a confession. In fact, two of them, one related to the other. The first, I, as a child, was a big fan of the World Wrestling Federation from Hulk Hogan on down. The second, I had no idea for the first few years I followed it that this sport was totally fake. Every move in and outside the ring, completely scripted. Hey, I never said I was a genius. Today, I'm going to talk to Brian Gewirtz, one of the people who did that scripting and wrote about his experience in his new book. He also has a new documentary series about wrestling's early days on Vice TV. We'll be back with Brian in just a minute.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
And we're back with Brian, author of the new book, There's Just One Problem, True Tales from the Former One-Time Seventh Most Powerful Person in WWE. Thanks for coming on, Brian.
Andrew, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So I suppose we should start with an explanation of what it even means to script something like wrestling, because I think that's a little subject to interpretation. Are you suggesting each and every move? Are you suggesting each and every word? I would imagine there's a lot of improvisation.
Yeah, there's many different facets, you know, to writing wrestling. And the writers themselves don't have the qualifications to write, you know, the moves per se. The wrestlers largely themselves are the ones who put the matches together. They work with former wrestlers called producers when it comes to the television shows and some of the live events. What we do as writers, we would, you know, write the storylines that lead up to the matches and propose what the matches are and propose who, as they say in wrestling, goes over in the match, which is to win or to lose. And then, you know, there are separate people who actually, you know, construct what is going to happen within the ropes. You know, we'll make a suggestion as far as like, oh, and this person will interfere and it will lead to something next week. But that's, you know, the extent of the in-ring action. We're dangerously unqualified, you know, to actually suggest what happens physically, especially because the wrestlers themselves, it's like, yes, it's predetermined and it's scripted. But the actual, you know, there's major physicality that's involved and injuries that occur and everything else. So it's really important that you have people who know what they're doing, you know, putting that stuff together. But the actual storylines and, you know, the in-ring promos, as it were, you know, in terms of like what the wrestlers are saying to each other, that's very collaborative as well. But that's where the writers really, you know, have much more involvement in terms of what that is, and working with the wrestlers and working with, you know, and during my tenure, Vince McMahon, as it would be now, Triple H, Paul Levesque, in terms of what gets approved and everything else. So there's backstage stuff. There's stuff that takes place outside of the arena.
Sure.
You know, so there's lots of different aspects to it, so that I really even realized.
We'll get to Vince in just a minute, because I'm certainly interested in hearing your opinion on where this league is at today. It's certainly an interesting time, but still want to know some more about the creative process here. What goes into being a great creative in the wrestling world? I would imagine it's not necessarily the same thing as writing for a sitcom or a talk show, and you've done that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, I mean, I always, you know, my uncle, Howard Gewirtz, was a longtime successful showrunner and executive producer. He wrote on shows like Taxi and Wings and Larry Sanders. And it's what I wanted to do, you know, ever since I saw, you know, his name in the credits watching Taxi as a kid. So I, you know, I was fortunate enough to have written on a few sitcoms prior to WWE. And WWE, yeah, it's a completely different animal. There's some similarities. It's actually evolved to have more similarities. When I first started, there was not many similarities because it was very run and gun. We'd be writing a Tuesday morning. We'd be writing the show that would take place Tuesday afternoon from scratch. Now it's much more prepared ahead of time, but nothing like the sitcom world. You know, like I'm here in Memphis, season 3 of Young Rock. And, you know, these like any other single cam sitcom, you know, the scripts are written. They're rewritten. There's several drafts. There's meetings with NBC and Universal getting notes and everything. And you're shooting individual scenes over the course of a week. Whereas in WWE, you know, you're preparing during the week, but basically the show goes on because it's 8 o'clock on Monday, not necessarily because it's ready or completely, you know, prepared, but you got to do it because you're on live television 3 hours and there's a lot of, you know, scrambling day of. It's frantic, but it's also, is that a word, frantic? It's very like adrenaline fueled. You know, there's just sure. a special magic, especially for the performers, because they have the added bonus that really no one else in scripted television does, of performing not for a studio audience of a few hundred, but of several thousand, and on pay-per-views that could exceed over 50,000 sometimes, people who will, and that we're not necessarily like, you know, conditioned to like it just because they're there. If they don't like it, they'll let you know. And you know, it's just very, very, exciting. And when you're feeding off of that, it kind of fuels you to the next show. You want to top yourself.
Yeah. You really capture that vibe in your book, which was such a fun read. And, you know, the funny thing is, the thing that I was struck by reading your book was I could have been you. What I mean that I too was a small Jewish kid growing up on Long Island who grew up loving what was then known as the WWF in its 80s heyday, from the first WrestleMania to Saturday Night Main Event. And I know you sort of came up following it as well. I mean, I don't know about you, I have this like Pavlovian response to hearing the opening notes of, remember that song Obsession by Animotion? Which was what kicked off Saturday Night Main Event. I hear those opening notes now, my adrenaline shoots out of my body because I remembered that was the feeling I felt when I was about to watch like the most amazing wrestling extravaganza.
And it's so funny, by the way, sorry to interrupt, but
yeah,
the fact that you said that. So at one point in the mid-2000s, Saturday Night's Main Event came back, or main, like there was some version of it that came back. And I was so adamant about using that song, the Obsession song by Animotion. And of course, you know, this was mid-2000s. They didn't want to seem, you know, the idea of it being retro was, sure. you know, being a step back and this is who we are now. And let's have some new metal 2006 song as the whatever it was. But I even went so far as to like, please just prepare an opening. Let's just show Vince what it would look like. And of course, I think it was Here Comes the Boom was the name of the song that they used. And it was edited exactly to the, you know, so this physicality on the booms. And then when the Animotion version, they just put the song over what they had already edited. So nothing synced up. It looked completely, I feel like, oh, I'm being sandbagged. But I so appreciate the fact that, you know, that you love that song, because I think it's in a whole generation, it really does speak to.
I respect the effort that you made. That's tremendous. You mentioned Vince. We got to go there. Obviously, quite the scandal that we've heard about in recent months, which has led to his resignation as the chairman and CEO. What is your, because you worked with this guy, you know him well. I'm not, you know, I'm sure you can't say, you know, what you saw, if there was anything on, you know, in terms of observing what was going on with the scandal. I think that sort of happened after your time. But can this league function without someone so central to what this sport is?
Yeah. I mean, I think the short answer is yes. And they're proving it right now. You know, Vince was where the buck stopped at WWE, but he also, you know, espoused a philosophy of no one person is bigger than the company. And that was certainly the case, you know, when talent left, when Stone Cold Steve Austin retired, when The Rock went to Hollywood, ultimately when John Cena went to Hollywood. There's so many, you know, great, great wrestlers that were the focal point of the show that ultimately stopped wrestling and the company went on and it went through peaks and valleys, but it still was on the air every single week. And from a company and a business standpoint, you know, I think Vince always employed the same philosophy that, like, you know, and he groomed people like Triple H, Paul Levesque included, you know, and his daughter, Stephanie McMahon, and several, you know, executives as well, to put it in, be in a position to succeed. You know, my whole reason for being at WWE came about because the two writers that were there at the time before I started, they, you know, through, and they have their reasons and everything, but they left the company WWE to go to rival WCW, and that left WWE with zero writers. And that's one of the main reasons why I was hired. They needed someone, and they needed someone right now. But Vince, you know, learned from that. He's like, I'm never going to put myself in a position where like I am all of a sudden without a writing staff because one or two people decide to leave. And I think that just general philosophy permeates. So now you have people being put in a position to, you know, essentially prove their worth when it comes to all these, you know, talent relations, creative writing, live events, all these aspects of the company that ran through Vince, but he had people, you know, in place there. And I think, you know, Paul Levesque and Stephanie McMahon and Nick Khan as well. I mean, Paul and Stephanie obviously went through the rigors of WWE and that culture. It's embedded in their lives. They've been in the company, you know. Triple H started wrestling in 1996, I believe, or 1995, and has always been. He didn't just all of a sudden graduate to behind the scenes role after, you know, Vince stepped down. You know, he had been an executive in the company, you know, for years before that. Even as a wrestler, he was always in the production meetings at television, you know, sitting in the front row, observing, learning, you know, absorbing everything. Stephanie too was, you know, Vince didn't put her in a position of power immediately. She interned essentially at the New York sales office at the beginning of her tenure. She followed and tracked Vince backstage before she, you know, took any sort of position. So I think they're well-versed. And Nick Khan, of course, is, you know, someone who's well-
former agent from CAA who now runs the business there.
Yeah. And on that business side, as WWE is evolving and needs someone just like him who knows these fields so well and is not in a wrestling bubble, as we call it. You know, I think that triumvirate, I'm saying a lot of words today that I'm not like, I hope these are actual words.
They are.
That was good. I think they've been put in a position where it's not like Vince is gone and all of a sudden it's the scene from Airplane. Does anyone know how to fly a plane? And there's just mass panic and everyone is waving their arms and screaming. It's like they're put in a position to now show their worth. And I think, you know, if there's any indication of the past month or two, you know, they're doing just that.
I wonder, though, and I think there's been a lot of speculation that has propped up the stock that the company may finally get sold. Could you imagine that happening?
Look, anything is possible, you know, and I think, you know, I wouldn't know exactly, but I would say when WWE Network first started, I had always, you know, thought like, okay, this is going to be something that WWE strongly feels is going to be its own streaming service. And I can't imagine this existing in any form. And it's, you know, no one is going to know how to do this better than us and all of that stuff and all their archival footage and everything else. And then all of a sudden now it's on Peacock and it's not its own streaming form anymore. And I was just like, huh, I did not see that coming. Right. And I think it's kind of like, you know, that's a good parallel because they're a business. It's fiercely and with much pride, you know, a family owned business, even though it's a publicly traded company, but the McMahons obviously own the majority of the stock and everything. But yeah, Vince has always been, you know, his philosophy and it trickles on down is there's more than one right way to do something. And, you know, if an opportunity comes along, they'll always do. It's funny because Triple H and Stephanie McMahon as television characters, they got a lot of heat as authority figures by saying we're going to do what's best for business. And on television, that translated to putting the good guys, the baby faces in precarious positions, but it's best for business. But now it actually is paralleling in real life. They'll do what's best for business. And whether that means one day selling the company, that could be, whether it means keeping the company forever and evolving, you know, with the times, I could easily see that too.
We'll be back in just a moment with more with Brian Gewirtz. Stick around.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. on demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more, with a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
We're back with Brian Gewirtz, author of the new book, There's Just One Problem, True Tales from the Former One-Time Seventh Most Powerful Person in the WWE. So, Brian, you have since left the WWE. You now work with Seven Bucks Production, which happens to be Dwayne The Rock Johnson's production company. What was your relationship with him like? I know you talk about this in the book, when you were both in the same league, and how did it sort of graduate to this whole new place?
Yeah, we had, for two people who were certainly physically extraordinarily different, you know, we kind of had the same, we definitely did not have the same path to get to WWE, but there are similarities in the sense that we're essentially 1 year apart, you know, age-wise. So we kind of have that same, you know, Gen X sensibilities in terms of hitting a sweet spot age when Star Wars and Indiana Jones and like all those things came out, and be having similar tastes and fans, you know, sense of humor, that kind of thing, to be able to relate as far as pop culture and movies and sports as well. You know, he famously, and I didn't realize that at the time, but as a member of the Miami Hurricanes, he'd come to Syracuse where I went, and they beat our asses pretty good in football. And I remember booing what turned out to be him and all his teammates off the field after they celebrated after a, you know, decisive, heartbreaking victory. But he always, you know, his philosophy, which is the same now, as it was then, has always been, show me what you got. I don't have, you know, there are a lot of wrestlers who had these fair, but, you know, preconceived notions of like, what can someone 5'8" from Long Island who doesn't look like they can crack an egg with a punch possibly tell me about how I, as a wrestler, am supposed to either trash talk or promote a match and sell tickets and that kind of thing, which I get. But his philosophy is always like, yeah, what do you, if you can help me, great. And if you can't help me, I'll still be fine. So let's see what you can do. And that's what kind of, you know, and I write about it in the book. I mean, that's when I met him at MTV doing these specials. He was impressed with what I had written. He's like, wow, you really captured my voice well in these promos. Have you ever considered working for WWE? Which I hadn't. And that led to me eventually getting hired And we always worked together on stuff at WWE. It was always kind of like, let's bounce ideas off each other. And it was very, very carefully crafted. It wouldn't be, you know, his philosophy wasn't like, yeah, I'll just go out and I'll do my shtick and then we'll go to the back. It's like, how can we creatively? Yes, there was a lot of catchphrases that people knew and stuff, but getting into it and the stories that he was telling, he always had a very, very, you know, carefully crafted fine eye towards what it was he was going to say and to who and how he was going to do it. Especially then when he turned heel, bad guy in 2003. And that sort of like was a brand new character, even though it was the same person. And that extended to television. You know, he took me along the ride. He hosted the World Stunt Awards, the Taurus Stunt Awards, which was an award show for stuntmen and women on the Paramount lot 2 years in a row. Early. This was probably like 2004, 2005 or something like that. And he was like, yeah, come on board. I'll get you hired as a writer. Let's do it. And we always kept in touch, even when he was doing his movies. And when it was time for him and Danny Garcia, his business partner, ex-wife, business partner, to start their own production company, $7. He was like, yeah, hey, listen, we'd love to have you if you want to come. And I was, you know, 15 years in WWE, like, yeah, I was ready. I was ready to transition while I was like, you know, I'm still in my 40s. There's still a lot of, you know, work to be done and experiences to have. So let's do it.
That's great. And, you know, you've gone on to do things like, you know, the Young Rock sitcom, which is returning to NBC. And is basically anything that The Rock does out of $7, you've got your fingerprints in it. Is that how it works?
Well, on the television side, because obviously we have television, there's movies, there's, you know, all the business, you know, expenditures. Again, I'm saying words that I feel I'm
it
trying
is a
to
word I can confirm
for the Variety podcast. You know, but between Terramana and, you know, his tequila company and Under Armour, Project Rock, Zoa, there's all these, you know, business ventures that all of us, you know, within $7 are always involved in, whether it's, you know, writing, you know, copy for, you know, a campaign, an ad campaign, or at least contributing to it. On the movie side, you know, I'm not on set on any of the movies unless I'm just visiting to say hi, but we all have, you know, meetings where we're discussing what projects we're all working on. We'll all be able to read the scripts and give feedback. On the television side, though, you know, that's more obviously my lane, and everything that, you know, we do on the television side, I'm involved with, but also it's certainly not a one person operation. You know, we have other members of the team on the TV side, other executives, and obviously we are in touch with Dwayne to get his feedback, opinion. He is not a movie star with a production company, hands-off producer. You know, anything that comes out of $7 is going to be associated with him. So he wants to know what it is and obviously wants to have some sort of connectivity to it, which we always try to do, even if it's on a surface level, you know, you wouldn't associate with The Rock. But, you know, there's always a way in terms of like, you know, he watches documentaries all the time, you know, in his 2 seconds of free time that he has. So we're developing, you know, a docuseries right now, that hopefully will be, you know, and be able to be announced soon. He minored in criminology at University of Miami. You know, that opens up a whole, you know, another level of projects, dramas, unscripted that we can do. But anything that even if just a member of the team, even if it's not Dwayne himself, has a passion for, he encourages us to pursue it and, you know, want to see it through. Because if you don't have, you know, if you're just going to like stamp your name on something and, you know, and then hopefully it gets sells. I mean, that's fine, maybe to a certain extent, but it really doesn't work on the $7 side, because you really need to have somebody on the team have a strong passion and connectivity to any project for it to really, you know, shine.
Well, one of the projects you guys have worked on is this new Vice TV docuseries that starts today, the day that this podcast comes out, called Tales from the Territories. Which goes deep on what wrestling was like in the 70s and 80s, a very different business then. You know, it's funny. I also sort of related to my own experience. I grew up in the 80s just watching WWF. And then I remember transitioning at some point to seeing magazines about the wrestling world. And lo and behold, discovering there's all these other leagues out there, like NWA and UWF. And the wrestling there was so much gorier with like barbed wire matches and buckets of blood. Like, I assume that's the kind of stuff this documentary gets into, the wild, woolly early days.
Well, yeah, we really, it's funny. We have the same exact, you know, fan experience as kids, you know, as I grew up in the 80s as well. And I remember the Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazines and seeing, you know, all these other companies and territories, essentially. And I remember seeing this picture of this wild, blonde-haired, long-haired guy drinking Jack Daniels and bleeding and thinking, oh, my God, look at that. That person looks like a maniac. And that was Michael P.S. Hayes, who I ended up working with at WWE for a decade and a half. You know, it was kind of funny how it came around. But, yeah, before, you know, Vince McMahon, you know, kind of nationalized wrestling, you know, with cable and WrestleMania and you know, and Turner to an extent too with WCW. But before that, you know, the wrestling world was essentially territorial. Like every region in America and outside of America too, in Canada, Mexico, they all had their own territories, and wrestlers would come and go out of the territories. And it would, you know, they'd have local TV, and it would be a really huge deal. You know, whether it was in Memphis, whether it was in Texas, with World Class, up in Portland, Calgary, and Stampede, Mid-Atlantic, there's so many different territories and stories. And this was during a time when, you know, fans were not as, you know, tuned in to the backstage workings of the business. You know, they treated it as real, and much realer than, you know, fans, you know, view the product today. So there was a lot of passion, and there was a lot of wrestlers, bad guys, getting attacked by fans. And, you know, if you were a good guy and you, or even if you were a bad guy and you were in a bar and you lost a fight to a quote unquote regular person, you'd be in big trouble, because that's, you know, that you're essentially, the illusion is being shattered. So there are these, and obviously too, on Dwayne's side, his dad, Rocky Johnson, wrestled in the territories, as did his grandfather, High Chief Peter Maivia. So this is something, you know, and that's one of the reasons, it's one of the foundations of Young Rock, the reason why he lives in so many different towns and cities, between Hawaii, between Memphis, between, you know, in real life, you know, he's lived everywhere. He's lived in Texas, he's lived in Connecticut, he's lived in New Zealand, you know, it's because of the territories, because his dad was bouncing around from territory to territory. So we were able to work with the Vice and creators of Dark Side of the Ring, their successful wrestling show, to get the real life people who experienced them, who lived during these times, and tell these stories and shoot recreations of these stories. So you're seeing these stories come to life. It was one of those things where, like, the dark side of the business has been, you know, well told, especially with Dark Side of the Ring being such a big success over at Vice. How can we, you know, tell the story of these basically wild, crazy, anything can happen, just needs to be seen to be believed type stories? And that was the, you know, the foundation of Tales from the Territories that, yeah, we're super excited about, you know, coming out, you know, today.
What was it like to get footage and find sort of the historical record there? Because this was these territories were far from a polished product. Was there a lot of effort that went into digging that all up, or was it there for the taking?
Yeah, I mean, there's archival footage and there's stills and stuff like that, you know, but the good thing is that the story isn't really relying on footage, because almost all of these stories are what takes place outside of the ring, and where there wouldn't be footage anyway. So that's why we're shooting these recreations while, you know, hearing from the people directly involved, or at least one step removed from the people directly involved, whether it was a story told to them or whether it was something that they lived themselves. So we could supplement that with footage of the people, the principals, but in terms of the actual stories of what went down, that's something what we just shoot ourselves and are able to kind of seamlessly insert it as these legends are telling their first person accounts.
And what legends show up in this doc?
So there's like a, you know, it was so much fun, you know, and that's part of my job as a producer was reaching out to Bret the Hitman Hart, reaching out to Jerry the King Lawler, reaching out to Jimmy Mouth of the South Hart, Jeff Jarrett, Jerry Jarrett, his father. And you know, between my relationships and Evan Hunsey and Jason Eisner, Dark Side of the Ring, you know, to be able to have Kevin Von Erich, be able to have Dr. D. David Schultz, and a lot of people who haven't really spoken a ton on, you know, these subjects. Abdullah the Butcher is on our show.
I remember that guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the guy that you'd read in the old, you know, magazine. Blaster magazine. So, oh, my God. Is that a fork coming out of his head?
Exactly.
You know, it's so cool. It's so cool to, you know, be able to see them in person. I was at a couple of the tapings and see them tell their tales.
Do you remember, by the way, from these magazines, I just had a memory, there was some company that would advertise you could create your own wrestler and make up moves, make up a wrestler, and you'd like hand in like, I don't know, $3 a month, and then they'd come back to you with like, oh yeah, your wrestler beat that wrestler, and it was this whole like 3-page printout of everything going on in the league, and I'm sure it was a total scam, but I still loved it.
I remember advertisements like that. I never had the...
I was the sucker who did it. yeah, I mean, and to this day, as you know, unfortunately, there, you know, when you grow up a wrestling fan, you know, hundreds of different performers, and it feels like nowadays, so many of these guys, like every month goes by, you hear one of them dying, and it's like a little piece of your childhood being peeled away one by one, where there are people that you wanted in this doc that you didn't hear from just because they were no longer with us?
Well, you know, yeah, you know, it would, in a perfect world, you know, I mean, summer of 2015 for me was very rough because, you know, Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, and Roddy Piper, two of my favorites. Roddy was my favorite as a kid. Dusty became my favorite when I had the opportunity to work with him backstage at WWE. Otherwise I had, you know, like seen, you know, as a WWF fan growing up, of course we saw the polka dot laden Dusty Rhodes, you know, when he was in WWE, but you know, it was a while other than the magazines to actually, for me at least, other people had probably a different experience to see him in action. And he was so magnetic and such a force of nature. Truly no one like Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream. And, you know, I got to work with two of his sons, Dustin Rhodes, Gold Dust, and Cody Rhodes. And you know, but just being able to work with Dusty, Dusty would have had a field day on this show. He would have been, he's such a great storyteller and such a great presence. The same with Roddy, although Roddy, you know, again, two very, very different people. But, you know, again, Roddy, he did a one-man show with all of his stories and everything. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of legends that would have been great to have on, but they're, you know, they're still, I think, in some cases mentioned in some of these stories, and being able to, you know, take them and, you know, have their legacy, you know, continue was very, very cool.
Well, that's the beauty of the wrestling biz. Lots of great stories, and you tell plenty of them in your new book, There's Just One Problem, True Tales from the Former One-Time Seventh Most Powerful Person in WWE. Brian, thank you for joining me today.
Andrew, thank you. This was a lot of fun. I expanded my vocabulary somewhat, I think. And it was,
well done.
Yeah, thank you. I'm very proud of myself.
This has been another episode of Strictly Business. Tune in next week for another helping of scintillating conversation with media movers and shakers. And please make sure you subscribe to the podcast to hear future episodes. Also, leave a review in Apple Podcasts and let us know how we're doing.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring?
but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, ah, yeah. Love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Tenor girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Got menopause? We've got you. Hi, Jackie here, founder of ExoJackie. Feel supported throughout your menopause journey and beyond with our organic protein powders and symptom relief boosts. Formulated to keep bones and muscles strong, ExoJackie products help reduce bloating, hot flashes, and weight gain. Enjoy 20% off with promo code EXOPODCAST. Shop now at ExoJackie.com. Made for women by women.